Hello and welcome to the Innovation Agency podcast with me, Caroline Kenyon. In this episode, we visit Alderhay Children's Hospital to meet a very special patient and her dad with paediatric surgeon Joanne Minford. Leah Bennett had what was described as an impossible tumour. We'll hear how the impossible became possible through teamwork involving specialists from Liverpool University Hospitals, including vascular surgeon Professor John Brennan, and a huge team at Alderhay. They decided to go ahead with highly risky surgery only after they'd seen a 3D model of the tumour, created by the company 3D Life Prints, who have a base in the hospital's innovation hub, and who we'll hear from in a future podcast. I'm in the Innovation Hub at Alderhay Children's Hospital, where lots of innovation happens, as we're about to find out. And with me is Leah Bennett and her dad, Stephen, and paediatric surgeon Joanne Minford. But I must ask Leah to describe what we're sitting in, because this is a bit different. I've never been in one of these before. Do you know what it's called, Leah?
Hedgehog pod.
Why is it called a hedgehog pod?
Because outside it looks like spikes with a hedgehog.
Joanne, can you give us any clue why we've got a hedgehog pod in Alderhay?
So we've used this quite a lot in Alderhay, and it's a soundproof pod that we can do interviews and videos in, and the spikes around the outside I think are for soundproofing.
It just looks cool to me, so I think you want one to have one at home, don't you, Leah?
Yes.
what do you think, Dad?
Yeah, we'll have to see about that. I'm not sure the pocket money will stretch some of these.
Right, well, this is a return to Alderhay for Leah, who's looking really well today, actually. But 7 months ago, she was very poorly and had to come and have major surgery, didn't you, Leah? You were only six then. How old are you now?
Seven.
So about a year ago, how were you feeling? What were things like for you before you had the surgery?
I was a bit scared. My dad didn't tell me everything, otherwise I'd be, like, freaking out.
What did you think was wrong with you?
I didn't really know at the time, and my daddy would trust me when, like, he trusts me, and so when he wants me to know about stuff, he tells me because I'm old enough to know.
So, Dad, tell us what was wrong with Leah.
So Leah was diagnosed with a large, they call it a retroperitoneal undifferentiated sarcoma. I know all the jargon now. Which was basically a large lump coming off the bottom of a spine, but it had grown quite large, quite undetected. It had grown quite large, and it had grown around some of her major blood vessels that leave her heart and feed her legs. So surgery was always, from day one, was always going to be a challenge for her, or for everybody. So she had 9 rounds of chemotherapy leading up to surgery, in the hope that the chemotherapy would shrink the tumour down and hopefully make the surgery a little bit more straightforward. And whilst it did have an impact, it didn't have the impact that we hoped and wanted. So it all came down to the surgery and the success of the surgery to give us any chance, really. So yeah, it was a pretty scary time for us, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And at the time, you were getting advice that it may not be a good idea, you may not be able to operate.
Yeah, so it was around probably, I'd say, mid-April into May. The feedback we were getting from Leah's consultant oncologist, Barry, was that the opinion, the general surgical opinion, was that surgery was going to be extremely challenging and probably was looking unlikely. Due to it not being in Leah's best interest because of the risks involved, the chances of her surviving the surgery, I think, were deemed to be too slim. That was quite hard to hear for us. Yeah,
Joanne, can you explain why that was the case? And also, I understand you took opinions from elsewhere.
Yeah, we did. So we talked about Leah a lot at the MDT meeting. So while she was having all these courses of chemotherapy, we'd been looking at her imaging and thinking about what we would do if we were asked to do surgery there. And I've got to say that none of the surgeons there wanted to do surgery, because we could see how this lump was wrapped around all the blood vessels that were going to and from the legs in particular. And we thought the risks of doing surgery would be really high, and that we might have catastrophic bleeding, or that we might affect the blood supply to vital organs or to the legs, which meant that she might lose a leg or have some irreparable damage. So we were all hoping that the chemotherapy was going to work, and that we would be let off the hook a little bit. But as Stephen says, it didn't work as well as we wanted it to. So we were sort of challenged and sort of thinking about what we could possibly do. And we canvassed opinion around the country, I suppose, which is what you do if you've got a really difficult thing, is you go and find some friends to talk to about it and see what their perspective was. And the other centres that do lots of this sort of surgery really weren't any keener than we were to do anything. But we sort of kept being challenged by Barry, and kept thinking about what we could possibly do, and sort of thought about what we had in Liverpool to be able to get a team together that might be able to help us. And asked the vascular surgery professor down at the Royal what he thought about reconstruction, and if we ran into some problems, would we be able to put some sort of a graft in to reconstruct the blood supply, and sort of came up with a plan with him that might mean that we could go and have a look and see what we could do.
At what point did you investigate the 3D printing of the model?
So we'd been thinking, because we knew that here at Alderhay people were using 3D printing for cardiac surgery and for spinal surgery, so we knew people were using it, and we'd been thinking a little while what would it add to our surgery, whether there were some instances in which it would really give us an extra bit of information that we didn't sort of get from the traditional imaging. So I think when we got to the point where we were talking in the multidisciplinary meetings about really there not being another treatment option, then we thought, let's see what this would look like if we had a 3D model of it, and see how we would we feel any different.
And when you were making the model, did you tell the family, did you tell Stephen and Claire and Leah what you were doing, or was it only after you produced it?
So the first I knew of it, saw of it, was I think it was over your shoulder when we went into the clinic room we got a meeting with the surgeons, because obviously it was quite difficult to hear as Leah's parents that the general opinion is that people aren't going to operate. We knew that surgery was her only chance, really, and it felt a little bit like the decisions were being made without really us having a voice and understanding that opinion. So so the surgeons kindly agreed to offer us some time, and my wife and I got in front of them, and yeah, walking into the room, I think I spotted it over Joe's shoulder without really fully knowing what it was.
Just backtrack a bit. So there was a point at which you were told that there was no treatment, no surgical treatment available.
We'd done our own research, and we kind of felt quite early on that it was all about surgery. The type of cancer that Leah had, pretty much everything we read online and from anywhere else said it's all about surgery, the success of surgery. So we knew that if people were saying this isn't going to happen, that was her chance, you know, that was a chance. And we had to make sure that we fully understood all the decisions being made and the opinions, and we were part of it. So that created the opportunity for us to come and meet and sit with the surgeons, and seeing the tumour in real life and in the 3D form was quite frightening at first. It was the first time we'd seen it on scans, but as a flat image on a computer screen, and that was hard enough. But to actually see it in 3D and be able to touch it and hold it was a really really chilling experience for me and my wife as well. But tinged with a bit of hope, I think, because we walked into the meeting with the surgical team kind of thinking we were probably going to be told that the answer's no, and walking out with that's it, her chance is gone. So to see this thing and be able to hold it, I knew that if people had gone to the lengths of getting that made, they wouldn't go to the expense and waste everyone's time if the answer was going to be a no. So holding it in my hand, as difficult as it was, I also felt a little bit of optimism that perhaps perhaps this means that these guys are clearly thinking about doing this and trying to come up with an answer to this, which was a real positive thought as well. So it was a strange mix of emotions for me, really.
I can imagine, because the print looks incredible. It's so big, isn't it? That tumour was so big.
Yeah.
So Joe, talk about that then, that 3D model. What was that experience like?
I think I'm just recalling some things as Stephen's talking there, and I think when we first started thinking about printing that, we really wanted to explain to the oncologists why we couldn't do this surgery, what the risks were in it. Because with the best will in the world, I don't think they really had a great grasp of what the surgical risks were. So we said, let's 3D print it. And then I think when we got the 3D model and we could see, it's very cleverly printed with the blood vessels in two different colours and the tumours clear, so you can see where these things are within the tumour and its relationship to the spine. Then we started to think, actually, I think we might be able to do something with this. I think we might be able to get somewhere with this. And it sort of just made that, all those conversations that we had, so much more real than just looking at scans. So when we had the 3D print in clinic then, I felt that I could explain exactly what my worries were about doing this surgery. And that Stephen and Leah's mum felt, you know, they understood what we were talking about. And so my consent for that operation from them was easy then, and felt really valid and really true. As I felt that we completely understood what we were talking about. It felt very different actually to a lot of consent that we do for operations. It just felt that we made a shared decision about where we were going.
Because they were better informed, because they could see and feel and it.
Understood what our concerns were real there, because they were out in front of us, rather than just, it's my opinion that this and this. Mm. There were a few opinions, weren't there? There were a few, like, the best opinion I can give you about what the risks are, or, you know, there's maybe only a 1 in 5 chance that we'll be able to do anything at all, because it will depend on how well supplied with blood the tumour is and how much bleeding we get within the operation. And, you know, there's maybe a 50-50 chance that we'll do this without causing some really significant damage. And they're best guesses, because these situations don't happen very often. So they're just sort of best estimates based on what your knowledge and experience is previously. But the actual appreciating the reality of those risks was really helped by having that 3D model out in front of us.
So it's a highly risky operation still. Mm-hmm. Did that print tip you into the decision, or would you have operated anyway?
I don't think we would have operated had we not had that print and had time to look at it and consider it and think. And it just sort of started to dawn on us, yeah, maybe we could do something about this. It really sort of, it just helped us as a team thinking about it, I think. And it also sort of gave us a bit more information about what areas we really needed to think about when we were doing it. It's not that we wouldn't think about that anyway, but, you know, from the vascular point of view, we could see exactly where we were starting and finishing and what the length of a graft might be and what vessels there might be. And then the venous anatomy, which is much more difficult to deal with. Actually, you can't put grafts in and things like that for veins. So, you know, the venous anatomy, where were our risky bits, and what was the collateral circulation? So that's like the circulation that's developed because the main circulation's been blocked, and that happens quite a lot in tumour surgery. But we got a better idea of where that was. And they're often the blood vessels that trip you up in surgery because they're in completely the wrong place. And so we sort of got a much better idea about things like that. Yeah. And it also meant that we could show it to everybody else in the team. So many of the people that were involved in Leah's surgery and the rest of Leah's treatment, actually, are not used to looking at scans, not used to making this 3D image in their head out of what they see on a screen, and it became a reality for them as well. So I remember using it at the theatre briefing to start with, and I remember using it with some of the theatre staff in preparation, so they all knew what we were doing to start with, and then we went to the theatre briefing with it, and suddenly the whole team just knew what we were doing immediately and were so focused. It is one of the few times that I have, in fact it might be the only time, that the theatre staff have actually said thank you to me after an operation. They said, thank you for setting that up so well. But that was because we had that model and we could see extra things that we needed to set up, but also because they understood what we were doing right from the very beginning.
So Stephen, if we move on to the operation itself then, that day of Leah going into surgery, what was that like for you and Claire?
Oh, I mean, that without doubt the hardest day of our lives, I guess. We knew. I think Joe's articulated it perfectly, and I think the thing, it was the shared decision making was really important to me and Claire, and we didn't feel involved in that discussion, that decision, that meeting with the surgeons to reach that point changed everything for us. Changed everything. So the day of the surgery then creeps up on us, and you kind of try and put it out of your mind. I think we all the family went out for a meal the night before to Leah's favourite Chinese restaurant, didn't we? We were trying to stay upbeat and positive, but, you know, leaving the table and everyone going home was like, it, all of a sudden, you know, it feels really emotional because people are giving her a kiss and saying see you tomorrow and that, and everyone, you know, the look on everyone's face, you know, they don't know whether that's going to be true or not. It's really hard. It's just about distraction, I guess. So we came in the next day, and Leah was obviously nervous about about going to theatre, which she had been throughout the whole journey. But actually, on the day, she was quite prepped for it. She knew she was going to theatre. She knew it was going to be a relatively lengthy op, and she was fantastic on the morning. Weren't you? Went and got on with it. And I guess as soon as she went down, you know, kissing her on the head and coming out of the anaesthetic room is probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, without a shadow of a doubt. It was so hard. But, you know, you get through it, and we went back and sat up in the ward, and realised within about 10 minutes there's no way we could just stay in that room for the rest of the afternoon. We knew it was going to be, you know, it was going to be a lengthy procedure. We walked around the park, adjacent park, probably 10, 15 times, just walking and chatting and constantly looking at my phone, making sure I had a signal to receive any phone calls. And it was about 1:30 in the afternoon. We got a phone call from Harriet, who's the urologist, who'd actually replaced Leah's urethral stents, and she said that bit of the procedure had gone fine, and she'd been told to pass on the message that the team had decided to continue with the surgery, which was great news, because obviously then that all of a sudden she's get again, you know, the chance is real that she's going to come through this. But then the reality of, well, but this is the risky bit. So if they're carrying on, which is fantastic, but this is the bit that, you know, this is the real crunch point. So it was positive, and then again you go back to being nervous about it, and then again just distraction as much as we could. And then we got the phone call. It was about 5:15, I think, and it was Joe who called me. And I think the words were something like, don't worry, she's fine. I'm coming up to see you. Where are you? And that was it. It was a really short phone. So I said, we're in room, whatever, on the ward. So, and then the phone went, put the phone down. And my wife says, what did she say? I said, she said she's okay. She said she's okay. They're coming up to see us, but she said she's okay. She really said she's okay. So, so then Joe and Fiona came up to see us in the bay. And I think quite bluntly, I think Joe's words are something like, she's fine, it's in a bucket on the way to pathology. Is that something like, yeah, that, Joe, was it? Which was just, I think my wife sort of looked at Joe and said, what, you've done it, it's out, you've done it. And Joe kind of nods, and that was it. I mean, I broke my heart cry. I just flung my arms around Fiona, Claire flung her arms around Joe. I think there was a little tear in Fiona's eye, and probably one in Joe's. It was what had been the toughest day, just completely changed on its head. And then we were desperate to see her then, so she wasn't quite out of theatre. I think the theatre team were finishing off, and then we were just waiting to go and see her in intensive care. She was sat up. I think she was actually, she had a big scar, obviously a big scar across her her abdomen and full of tubes, but I think she was sat up and actually asking for some Rice Krispies at that time. So yeah, I knew she was fine when she said that. So yeah, it was a really emotional day and some magical moments mixed in with what was some really challenging moments as well.
Do you remember anything, Leah? Do you remember that day?
No.
Do you remember asking for Rice Krispies?
Yes. Yeah.
Were you hungry?
Very.
What about all the people who were helping you? Do you remember all the names or some of the people who were there?
Yeah, I remember Joe, Fiona, Matthew and John.
Let's ask Joe then. So how was it, Joe, when that going through that unique operation and being so risky? What sort of an experience was that for you and the team?
I think it was not as hard as we thought it was going to be. And I think that's partly because we had a great team and partly because we were all quite experienced consultants. We set what we would call a 3-session day up to do this for Leah, which meant, and we told theatres that we didn't think we'd be finished by 9:30, 10 o'clock. We were sure that we were going to be in there all day. It went much, much more smoothly and more quickly than we thought. And I think that's partly because we had a very experienced team, but it's partly because we had that model. And there's some suggestion in the literature that 3D printing can reduce your operative time. That's great for somebody like Leah. She's asleep, but she's still having an anaesthetic and having the challenges of surgery. So to be able to do something more quickly than you would be able to otherwise is brilliant as well. So it was a tough operation and we were... We were all very relieved, I would say, at the end of it. We were really relieved to be able to say we'd got... I think Barry set us the challenge of getting 90% of the tumour out because we knew that there were some that we wouldn't be able to get to. And we were very relieved to be able to say that we did that. And we intended Leah then to have a quiet night on the intensive care, but she had different ideas. I mean... Your mum and dad had warned us that you sort of tended to go your own way, actually. But we expected to go and see you on in intensive care, you know, an hour after the surgery, and you'd be lying there with a breathing tube in, being really quiet. And what you were actually doing was you'd take the breathing tube out and you were going, leave me alone, get me some Rice Krispies. So we were very proud of you anyway, because we knew that you would recover well, because you're made of strong stuff.
As a paediatric surgeon, you're operating on children all the time, which in itself is just unbelievable. It takes a special person to do that. But Leah obviously has to be one of those cases that you will never forget. Yeah. Has it also been a turning point in any way? Will it make you do anything different in the future?
Yeah, it really has. I will never forget Leah. Ever. But I think from our point of view as a team, I think it's made us braver to think about doing things that we initially might think, no, that's not possible to do that. So we've done another case since Leah of a similar type of tumour, slightly different biology, but also wrapped around a lot of blood vessels. And that was really informative as well. But now we've sort of seen what a 3D print can look like and can add to our decisions and what we're thinking about. I think we'll do that more often. So we've done another case and we have one that's being printed at the moment. And it's not all about whether that makes your surgeries easier. It's something about whether that makes your decisions better.
And the family become more better informed.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's really important to me that when we're doing this sort of stuff, we're making decisions with people. We're not doing things to people. It's the only way to move forward for us. So I think it's changed the way I think we think about consent. It's changed the way I think about briefing the theatre team. It's given us some educational things. We streamed this operation to one of the other theatres and we had the model in this other theatre for part of the time. So the students were looking at what was happening on the screen, looking at the model. So there's that piece of it. There's the multidisciplinary decision and understanding what we're all talking about. It just changed the whole way that I think about that big, almost impossible surgery as a package now.
And of course, this story has been heard and seen by millions of people on the telly, in the press, on the radio. Leah, you've been on the couch, haven't you? On breakfast TV. What was that like?
I was nervous when I came on, and then I got used to it, and then I didn't feel like that as nervous anymore with people on right next to me to help me with questions if I got stuck on them.
What do your friends and teachers at school say about all this?
Normally when I have to go to the hospital, when I have to leave for an appointment or something, it says everyone say bye to Leah, and they're like, bye Leah!
What did they say about your app?
They didn't really mention anything.
They all think you're very brave though, don't they?
Yeah.
And they all think you're famous because you've been on TV now, don't they?
Yeah.
Okay, Stephen, what's happening now? I think you've probably had enough of media interviews. But you are fundraising, aren't you? You've been fundraising. So who are you fundraising for? And what's the message to anyone listening to support that fundraising?
Yeah, so we set up a GoFundMe page largely to just sort of get the message out. There was three reasons we wanted to tell Leah's story. One, we wanted people to realise what this trust and what the surgical team particularly have done for us to get us to this point, and really, really give them a platform to shine. The second reason was to give hope. I think when you're in a really dark place and things aren't looking great, I think hope is literally the only thing that keeps you going. And I think thinking back to sort of April and May when things were really challenging for my family, I personally was desperate to speak to somebody who'd been through this, whose child had been through this, just to give me that hope that actually there's a success story out there that we can pin our hopes upon. And unfortunately, I didn't come across anybody. I think and as time goes on, you realise that's because this hasn't been done before. So there's an opportunity for myself and my family to position ourselves as that person I needed to speak to sort of 9-10 months ago. That's me now. So, you know, and we've already had a really amazing reach. I've had people reach out to me from different parts of the UK who've been through, whose children are going through something similar, and I've seen Leah's story on TV, they've said that they found new hope for it. So already, you know, there's been a real benefit to that. And then thirdly, we just wanted to raise a bit of money for some of the charities. So when your child's diagnosed with something like this, you're immediately plunged into this world that you know very little about. And it's probably a good thing that most people don't know anything about, because it's really tough. But there's so many amazing people and amazing charities who help you get through, who support you financially, emotionally, in so many ways. We counted 20, there's probably more. So an opportunity to sort of get the story out there and hopefully raise some money to give something back to those charities who can then help other people who are going through this was just an opportunity we couldn't say no to. So yeah, we've set up a GoFundMe page called Team Leah Fighting Back Against Cancer, and yeah, it's doing okay. We've raised over £6,000 on that so far, and we hope to raise some more. And yeah, and I'm sure we'll be fundraising for it. We've been tin rattling in the supermarkets as well, haven't we? It's had such a profound impact on us. And we genuinely could not have got through this without the help of so many people. So an opportunity to do something good and make some positives out of this is, you know, we've got to do that. So that's what we're doing.
But I'd like to say thank you very much. Thank you very much, Leah and Stephen Bennett and Joanne Minford. It's been an absolute pleasure to hear your story. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Isn't it an amazing story? Thanks so much, Leah, Stephen and Joanne. The creators of the 3D model of the tumour were 3D Life Prints, who've been supported by the Innovation Agency to expand into other hospitals. We'll be hearing from them in a follow-up podcast, so do listen out for that. To donate to the cancer charities who supported Leah and her family, look up GoFundMe.com and search for Team Leah Fighting Back Against Cancer. Thank you for listening.